Mr. Gregg, Rail 13. Right, Mr. Gregg, we're talking about the first day of the Battle of Sedgenane, and you had the mule and you had the machine gun. What happened?
Yes, well, we approached the hill and went as far as we could up to where the mule could go. There was a man in charge of the mule who knew how to handle it, of course.
Was he a DLI man?
No, he was a civilian. He'd probably be an Arabic. But
was he in uniform?
No, he wasn't in uniform. He was just in plain clothes. Might have been a denim suit he had on, something like that. But he went as far as he could with the mule. Then we unloaded it and we proceeded to go further up the hill. In the meantime, Sergeant Dorman and a section of the Kerry platoon, one section, went round. We sent them round the right-hand side of the hill, the object being that we were going on to the face and we didn't want anybody coming round the backside. So we sent a section with Sergeant Dorman in charge to give us any warning on or fire it. If they fired, we'd be able to hear them. We know the Germans were coming round the other side. So we made his way, dragging the Vickers, and just before we got to the top of the hill, probably 25 yards before the top, I went on to the left face and set up the Vickers. We could plainly see where the German machine gun was situated in the side of the hill. They were behind rocks and on the side of the hill, but we could see where his gun emplacement was by the every time he fired it. Of course, the smoke came off, so we knew exactly where he was. So I set the Vickers machine gun up to engage this machine gun, and first puff of smoke, I was out there with the machine, with this Vickers, and letting as many rounds off as what I thought necessary, and it was all going very well. And next puff of smoke, I was there again and keeping it quiet. And eventually, he didn't seem to be firing as much. So Lieutenant Lax went behind the gun. He had an idea, well, he knew how to fire it.
So you taught him as well?
So I then took the Bren gun from my Bren gun man, which was private, one of the privates anyway, he was my Bren gunner. I took the Bren gun then and I said, I'm going to crawl forward, higher up, and so as I can look down into the valley below. So a bit higher up than where his Vickers were firing, I then took the Bren and crawled forward on my belly, of course. I got to the where I could see then down below into the valley, and there he was, sure enough, was the mortar, as plain as day. I could see the Germans all round it, feeding it. I looked on the side of the hill, opposite, and there were two spotters. Well, first thing I did with the first magazine, turned it on the two spotters and put them out of action straight away. Then I turned my sights then down to the mortars down below, and it were no difficulty to put them out of action. After I'd done that, that didn't operate anymore. I can assure you of that. And I crawled back then to Lieutenant Lax and the rest of the patrol who were around the gun. I gave the gun back to Bren Gunner. And then I sent the runner back to see what we had to do next. We'd achieved as objective, and we'd silenced the machine gun, and we put the mortar out of action. So that was an assignment, and that was assignment complete. So we then had a spell we were doing nothing until I got the runner to go, sent the runner on to find out what his next objective was or what we had to do from there. Because none of us knew, because we were away from any other connection. So in the meantime, while we were waiting, I saw a section, some troops walking towards Seginade on his right-hand side, and I thought, who the hell are them? And I said to Lieutenant Lax, I says, I wonder who that lot is. I says, most of the regiment was on our left, but this was coming round in the direction where we'd sent Sergeant Dorman and everything. Anyway, while we were waiting for the runner to come back, suddenly mortar bombs started coming from the top of the hill, and the Germans were there, they're on a stick, and they throw the stick with the grenades on, not mortar bombs, grenades, I'm getting mixed up there. Grenades started coming over the top of the hill. So I swung the Vickers round, and on a swinging traverse, which I'd never, they said, you'll never have to do it this way. And it was one of the first actions we'd been in, and now here I was on a swinging traverse. So I fired the gun, of course, and silenced the first lot what were coming over, and I shouted to everybody to get out. Well, the lads all got out, and Lieutenant Lax says, I'm staying with you. I says, you better not. And I gave a few choice words, and ending with off, and off he went. So I stayed behind the gun, and two or three waves came over throwing their hand grenades, and I was there behind the gun until the belt had gone through, and then I've nothing left. So I whipped the lock out of the gun and rolled down the hill right away till I stopped, and it was fairly steep, so I got a good roll on, and got to the bottom, and then I hit shots coming from behind me, so I did a zigzag course and dived straight into the river bank. Once I got to the river bank, I knew I was safe. However, I hadn't even got a scratch, which was most unusual. Although when they were coming over, I was laid on flat on my back, so and operating the gun from over the top of my head, so that a grenade, if it did it, it'd have to hit me rather than and to do any damage. So I got free from that, and I've got down to the river bank, as I said, making a zigzag course, so that they couldn't keep a direct fire on me, and then got to the river bank, and I just moved down the river. I knew I was safe then because we were below ground level. So as I moved down the bank, I caught up with me Bren Gunner and one or two more of the lads, and I says, we'll stay here and see if they come down out of the hills, we can engage them. But anyway, they never came out of the hill, didn't the Germans, although the They certainly occupied it, but they didn't come to the face side. They seemed to keep behind.
Just to stop you there, Mr. Drake, about how close did these Germans get to you when you were on the beach?
Oh, there was only between 10 and 15 yards, that's all. Right close to us.
How many were there?
Oh, they were coming over in a different, more or less a section at a time. You know, coming up and throwing they all seemed to have hand grenades, and they were quite close. I couldn't miss them.
What were the? How did these men strike you? These German troops. What were they? Did they seem kind of courageous? Did they seem?
Well, they seemed courageous enough because they'd come up round the back of this hill, and certainly come up the back side of the hill and over the top.
And so was it steep on their side as well?
It's just steep on their side, just as well as it was on our side. So it was, they were certainly fit troops and seemed quite capable.
And what kind of weapons did they strike you as having?
Well, it were mostly grenades what they were throwing. They were trying to get rid of me by throwing grenades, you see.
But did they not have a direct sight of where you were because of the...
No, they didn't really, because as they come up to the top, I could see them, and I was firing away, so they had to keep down.
No.
But they still were throwing their grenades, and then they'd try and come forward, and if one popped up, of course he'd had it.
Now, you sent your officer back.
Yeah.
Now, obviously he was a senior rank to you.
Yeah.
How you had the confidence to be able to do that?
Yeah.
Could you just talk us through that?
I don't know. It was just my way. That's what I say. You never know what's going to happen when you're in a battle like this, and you're in these tight situations. You react to what your body reacts. And mine was for him to get out. He was more important than I was. And so were the lads. They'd gone. He wanted to stay with me. I wanted him to get out. And it was a few swear words before he went out, I'll tell you. He did really want to stay, but I made him get out.
Now, did you feel that you were more competent to deal with the situation than he was?
Well, apparently that's how I must have felt at the time. And I was seen to be conducting all the arrangements all the time. And because I told him to go behind the Vickers to engage, while I crawled forward with the Bren to engage the mortars.
Now, I think you said earlier that he was quite a lot younger than you.
He was a younger man than I.
So you felt that you were...
I felt... although I respected him and I obeyed his orders, which you always do anyway, I always had that feeling that I was still strong enough to give orders and know what I was doing. I always knew what I was doing, and it always seemed that what I was doing was correct every time, because they got out, all my lads got out, I was the last to get out, and there's still no one was injured.
Now, about how many were there in your little group that
got under the... There was 8 in his section, and Sergeant Dorman was... there's 8 in their section.
So there's
8 in each section, you see, were distributed even. Later I was found out that the troops we'd been seen walking across the open no man's land was Sergeant Dorman and his section. Afterwards I learned that he thought there were so many Germans, they didn't bother firing, they got out of it. There were too many for them to cope with. So they must have been in the bottom where we couldn't see, and come round the base and round the side of the hill and then up the hill to trap us. We could have, they could have trapped us quite easily if they'd kept round the base because there was nobody to stop them. But they chose the wrong way. They came over the top.
Now, just to stop you there, you've been through the battle school.
Yeah.
And you'd had all of that close experience of gunfire and so on, but this was your first time in action.
Yeah.
As such.
Yes.
What was the difference?
Ooh, and, only difference was this was actually real, you know, and I never looked upon it as what I just accepted what it was, and I was, I suppose I my reaction was at the back of my mind, so I used to think, well, if I kill 12 Germans before I get killed, then I'll, at least I'll have done my duty. And that was all at the back of my mind. So nothing troubled me to a certain extent, because I always thought, well, if there's only my name on it, I'll get it, and if there isn't, well, I won't. And I accepted that. It was a feeling in myself that if I'd once come in my way, well, that'll be me, and that's it. So my reaction was when I got really in action like this, I could, I kept my head, I knew what I was doing, whereas a lot of people lose their head. And I was one who I could keep my head, and I knew what I was doing, and I was doing the right. I always seemed to do the right thing, which was most important, whether by luck or management. Neither I nor anyone else can tell, but I always seemed to do the right thing.
So you think you're training in England?
My training, I always realised then, whenever we got in these situations, what this training was all about. If we hadn't been 100% fit, we could never have done what we did. There's no doubt about that, as training was the most essential part of our army life.
Now, what about the battle school? If you hadn't gone to the battle school and you were faced with this situation, do you think you would have coped with it?
Yes, I think I would.
So you already had the training without the battle school?
Yeah, the battle school learnt you to beware of live bullets. And, of course, you're aware of live bullets when you get into these difficult situations or in attacking situations or retreating situations. You're aware of bullets. And
how are you aware of them?
Well, you know that you're not in it for fun. And
but how are you conscious of them passing? Or is it?
Only time you... No, you're not conscious of it passing. You see the... as I say, like, you... They see the smoke coming from a machine gun, and you see the mortars when they explode on the plains below, and there's nothing coming your way, so it didn't worry me at all. I just carried on with what I had to do. Well, that was the main thing, what was in my mind, what we had to do. That was the main concern.
What about these grenades when they were exploding?
When they were exploding, it didn't worry me. I just carried on firing. I knew I'd stop them. And so long as I kept flat, I thought, well, they'll have to hit me if you want. One will have to drop right on me to do any damage. Is that, this is what I thought. Of course, one could have kept low. But I didn't. Sustain any injuries in any shape or form.
And how many of them do you think you...
Oh, there must have been 20 or 30 of them, and these really, 20 or 30 of them come over. And actually, when I did eventually get back, I'd been reported grenaded to death, but I stopped that message going through. Thank God.
Now, so you got back from the hill.
We got back from the hill into the river bank, and as it, I collected a few, like my Bren gunner and one or two more of my section were there, and we waited there, kept the Bren gun on the back top of the bank, and a couple of riflemen there just to see that the Germans didn't advance any further. And as it grew, it started to get dark. So as it grew dark, then I thought, well, it's time to move out. So we followed the bank down the river and so far, so that at least we were safe, and then we could get up and walk over the plain land and get back to Seginaid. So on his way back, I heard a moaning sound, and we were one or two of the rifle companies, one or two of theirs were strangled about and lost, sort of thing, and they heard us coming, and so they tagged on. I said, come on, you'll be all right with us. And I heard this moaning in the one of the bushes, and I went over to investigate, and there was an officer from one of the rifle brigades and
rifle companies.
From one of the rifle companies, and went and had a look, and he'd been shot in the back. And so I called a couple of lads up, and we got hold of him and carried him back, and was still picking an odd fella up. Now I took him all the way back to Seginaid, and then I went into the HQ office, and which is in one of the buildings, and all the officers were there, and I pushed my face in, and everybody looked aghast when they saw me. I said, just said, Sergeant Drake reporting back. I said, and there's 24 fellas outside from different companies, waifs and strays, I brought back with me, and an injured officer from one of the companies. So, that was that.
What was there?
They said, you've been reported to death. I said, well, I'm here. I said, I'm not dead. I said, I'm here, and I'm all in one piece.
Now, you'd been involved in your particular part of the battle.
Yeah.
Now, how did you understand, what was your understanding of what had happened to the other companies, to the rifle companies?
Well, all I could seem to understand, they'd had a nasty battering. They'd certainly suffered a lot of casualties, and prisoners had been taken, and they were in a pretty bad way. That seemed to be the general opinion, which were passing round.
And what was when you came into the battalion headquarters and you saw the officers and so on, what was their mood at this point?
Well, they were quiet. There was no frivolity or any drinking or anything like that going off. They was all in serious. They're always in serious mood.
And can you can you remember the officer that was wounded? Who that was that you brought back?
No, I don't remember his name. But I later received from him. Apparently he died, but before he died, he had an official police Colt revolver, which had a silver police Colt in the handle. A silver Colt in the handle. And I always remember it. And it was his personal property. And somebody brought it up to me and said this officer had asked that I were presented with it because had taken the trouble to see who it was and bring him back and get him back to hospital. But I did hear that he'd died. So
he died during the battle?
He died while he was in hospital. He was still alive when we brought him back, but he was seriously injured because he was shot in the back. You could see all his tunic were bloodstained. And so I don't know exactly where his injuries were, but it was certainly in the back. But I did hear that he'd died, and I did know his name at the time, but I couldn't think of it because it wasn't a name that I was familiar with. Otherwise, I would probably have remembered his name, but I did see that he got back with the assistance of the squad that I had collected on my way back. And so, as I said, I don't recall his name now. I did know it at the time, and he told me who it was.
Now, so you got back to the battalion headquarters. Who was actually given the orders and who was in charge at this point?
Well, more or less, Lieutenant Lax. He was our main officer then.
In the HQ?
Of course, I got to know that what had happened to Captain Kirkup, his nerves had just gone and that he'd been referred back to hospital, so he'd gone back to hospital, so... Lieutenant Max was the most important officer of that day, as far as we was concerned. In fact, I think he was eventually promoted to captain in place of Captain Kirkup, but I'm not sure. When it came out, there was no... it was a serious... Things were serious, there were no doubt about that, and... When I came out, I heard that two of us, the carriers, had been bogged down and had got bogged up in the land just outside towards the hills. So I didn't fancy being left to the German troops. So I said, right, come on, lads. I says, I'll go and get them out. So... We got some chains from the rest of the carriers and took a carrier out into no man's land and one or two of the lads with me and a couple of drivers. And we got to the two carriers which had been bogged down. We stayed on to the safe side of the bog and... I opened the carriers up and the drivers got in and I left one to guard the place and just in case a German patrol came along. And we got one of the carriers out and then I went back and we eventually got the other carrier out, so we didn't leave any of the carriers out. By that time I think it was daybreak next day.
Happened then?
Well, then, what happened after that? Well, we got orders then, and there was about as many as we could sort of muster, and about 20 of us in total. And the colonel came down, Captain Balance was one, Lieutenant Lax was the other, myself, two or three sergeants, corporals and other ranks, 20 in total. And we were issued with the orders that we had to defend the village on our left flank. So that the Germans didn't come out of the hills and attack the village from that end. They were moving down the main road from Bizerta, the Germans, towards Seginane. But the object was to prevent them from taking Seginane because they could get... They wanted the train to come up at night time and bring some tanks up, you see. So they were going to... this was going to be his first... view of the tanks coming into action. So our job was to, it was a decoy job, to attract the enemy's attention and to stave off any attack from that particular area.